This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. In the early hours of Sunday morning, the most deadly mass shooting in American history took place in a gay nightclub known as Pulse in Orlando, Florida. At least 49 people were killed, more than that injured. There are still many details to be learned and facts that have yet to emerge clearly. But the name of the alleged gunman is known, Omar Mateen, a 29-year-old American man originally from New York, but who'd been living in Florida. It's been reported that he called 911 during the attacks to pledge allegiance to the Islamic State. And early speculation on the target of his attack, the gay nightclub, have focused on reports that Mateen became enraged by seeing two men kissing several weeks ago. This morning, VPR spoke with Kim Fountain, executive director of the Pride Center of Vermont. She referenced that story.
I hope that there's going to be change in thinking that two men kissing should not be an act of bravery that incites homicidal rage.
To that end, communities around the country are coming together to condemn the attacks and work to bring people together. The Pride Center is organizing a march and vigil tonight at 6 o'clock in Burlington, starting at the top of Church Street downtown. Fountain says there's more than one issue to be addressed.
We have to look at it in the broader context because our lives are complicated. You know, we're not single issue beings, and so we're affected by multiple issues. So when it comes to things like, you know, the assault rifles and LGBTQ identities, you know, it's just something where we have to respond in a coordinated community response. What ends up happening is we have to have the police on board, we have to have religious leaders on board, and we have to have, you know, the LGBTQ community mobilized, and that's what's happening here in Vermont.
Today on the show, we're going to talk about how various groups are coming together in our region, and we wanted to offer a place for you to share your thoughts and reactions. If you'd like to add your voice to the conversation, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net or on our Facebook page. How are you feeling? What you're thinking? Any actions you think you're going to take? Are you thinking about violence, terrorism? Are you thinking about homophobia, Islamophobia? We'd like to know where your head is today and what questions you have and how you're reaching out to others in your community. Again, call 1-800-639-2211. We are going to talk with some of the leaders of faith communities in Vermont. We're going to look at how you can deal with feelings of vulnerability and sadness and how you can talk to your kids about these events. But we're joined first today by Amanda Rodenberg, the Director of Advocacy for Outright Vermont. Outright is an organization that provides support, advocacy, and celebration of young queer people in Vermont. Amanda, it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much.
What was your immediate reaction yesterday as you started to understand what had unfolded in Orlando?
Yesterday just felt so shocking and at the same time so, I can't say blindsided. I think that this is what backlash looks like. You know, visible gains are made in the community and steps are made forward. And then those gains are used to stoke the fear and anger that people have and used for political gain. And then violence happens.
So you were expecting something in a way?
Just expecting some reaction. You know, the gains in marriage equality, the visibility of trans people, the debates going on right now over bathroom bills and that absurdity, and then the shows of support for all of those things. So the federal government coming out in support of trans students accessing gender-affirming bathrooms. So I can't say that I was expecting it, but I'm also not surprised.
So when you start to look at what's happening, you know, what had happened that at least 49 people now killed in that mass shooting and the 50th being the gunman himself, what's the symbolism of a nightclub being the target and during what for so many communities around America is Pride Month?
Yeah, I think that bars hold a special place in the queer community as sort of the place where the counterculture movement could start when queer and trans people weren't accepted in public spaces, didn't have access to community supports. They found their own supports and they built them in nightclubs and bars. And so it's not just a place of celebration and a source of pride, especially during the month of June, which in many parts of the country is Pride Month. But it's also the source of community organizing for social justice. And so it sort of really attacks close to the heart of the movement.
Listeners, what do you think? Are you looking at this through the lens of homophobia, hatred, as Amanda Rodenberg suggests, backlash against some of the progress that's been made for equal rights for people regardless of their sexuality or gender? I'd love to know your thoughts. 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You know, Amanda, we don't really know yet all of the motivations of this shooter, Omar Mateen. It has been suggested that he saw two men kissing and that enraged him, and perhaps that directed his rage and his anger and his violence. So, you know, when you start to think about the context of violence against people because of their sexuality and because of their gender, you know, we don't know what he was thinking along those lines, but you see a trajectory here. You know, clearly you've said from the progress that's been made in this country to a backlash and violence, whether or not he was thinking that, you see that trajectory?
Yeah, I do. And I see it as sort of a spectrum of violence. You know, this is the obvious extreme end of it. And then, you know, it ranges all the way down to families rejecting their children because of fear. And I think a lot of that fear is based exactly in this fear of what violence you might face by simply loving who you love. And that's a real fear for a lot of parents that causes them to react in pretty problematic ways when their kids come out to them about who they authentically are.
Do you know much about Pulse, the nightclub in Orlando that was targeted here? I mean, we've been hearing that it's a space not just for music and dance and coming together, but that it really was a place that was designed to be a safe space for people regardless of their sexuality.
Yeah, I was reading just yesterday a really beautiful story about the name of the club and that it was named for a brother who had passed, I think, due to HIV-related illnesses, and that Pulse is for the sound of his heartbeat and carrying that on. I think that's really beautiful.
Yeah, and I think I heard the same story, and it sounded like he came out to his parents, and they were quite religious, and perhaps surprisingly to some, wound up, you know, accepting him and saying, this is fine, we love you. And so it became this sort of welcoming thing, even though, you know, you're mentioning that many parents are problematic when their kids come out to them.
Well, and I think it's a learning process, you know, especially when that's not something you were expecting to confront in your own family, that can come up with a lot of really hard feelings and a lot of work that we as individuals have to do to come to a better understanding. And I consistently find myself telling parents, like, this is your kid. It's still your kid. You know, they have the same sense of humor. They're going to laugh at the same jokes. They're still your kid. And that's the bottom line for me.
Let's hear from some of our listeners. Our number, if you'd like to chime in, is 1-800-639-2211. What are you feeling? Have you reached out to members in your community of whatever faith group? Maybe you've reached out to people in your community who are gay. If you'd like to share your thoughts with us, you can post a note as well on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Let's go to Cornelia, calling in from Chelsea. Hi, Cornelia. Go ahead.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wish I could be more cheerful, but after the shock and sadness of all day yesterday, I was looking for some bright side to this. But the reality is, I don't think it's going to change anything, because I think people feel how they feel, and they're going to make the same arguments that they always make. And if a classroom full of dead first graders didn't bring Americans together, people at a gay nightclub aren't going to.
Cornelia, when you say that people aren't going to change, what are you specifically thinking about that you want to see change?
Well, you know, obviously some assault rifles should be banned, and we can't even come together over some of the really obvious and tiny gun control measures, and also just acceptance of, you know, the community. And I guess I just, tolerance, we've already shown that, you know, we're more and more polarized, and people who are going to love are going to love, and people who are going to hate are going to hate. I, you know, that's so gloomy, but I I wish something good could come out of this. And I feel like locally it is, you know, in Orlando and in other communities, but I just, the polarization and the hatred is, I don't know what the answer is.
Well, Cornelia, I hear your despair and your comments, and I appreciate you taking the time to call in. We're talking right now with Outright Vermont Director of Advocacy, Amanda Rodenberg. And, you know, one of the things that Cornelia brought up is she said, if, you know, 26 dead children doesn't change something in America, the victims of this tragedy won't either. And I want to be a little bit more pointed in that. Are you seeing, or do you think, Amanda, that there is a question in this country about not victim blaming exactly, but, you know, that some victims are more worth sympathy than others, and that perhaps still in this country there is a question about whether gay men deserve the same sympathy that first graders do?
Yeah, absolutely. I see that. And you know, we can even see that in the way that this tragedy is being reported on and the focus on it as a gay club. And of course, we know that it was Latin night at that club and a lot of people of color were attending and there were drag queens and trans people headlining the event. And so what we're actually seeing are a lot of queer and trans people of color being targeted. And I think that is one of the realities of the way that violence works in the LGBTQ community, that a lot of our resources and focus are often on wealthy, white, often gay men. And then these marginalized communities or folks who are at the intersection of many marginalized communities find fewer resources, find less access to empathy and sympathy and community when tragedy strikes.
When you say you're finding trans people, drag queens being targeted, you mean now since the tragedy or in general?
Oh, in general. In 2016, I think that at least 16 trans women of color have been murdered so far this year.
And are you seeing a backlash since the shootings this weekend towards the same communities?
I haven't seen that here. I'm hopeful that as a community we can come together and keep that from happening. I think that it's still fresh and still new, so we'll see.
We got a note from PRH who says, I know that the Orlando perpetrator's actions were not likely the result of rational decision-making, but for those who choose to encourage this kind of behavior in any faith, ask yourselves, what is worse, two men kissing or killing 50 people? And let's go to John, who's calling in from Marshfield. Hi, John. Go right ahead.
Hi, it's actually Joseph from Marshfield.
Hi, Joseph. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to let people know that there are two vigils happening in Vermont that I know of, one in Burlington at 6 o'clock tonight in front of the Unitarian Church to honor the dead, and another in Montpelier at the Vermont State House at 5 o'clock tonight. So people should come out and honor the dead and also to talk about loving one another rather than hating one another.
Joseph,
so if people can come out, that would be great.
Joseph, you're in Marshfield, so are you going to the Montpelier Vigil? Are you planning to go to either of these?
I'm going to the Montpelier Vigil, yes.
And when...
You know, I just want to say, I'm a Christian, and Christianity is about love. It's about the deep contemplation of what love is. We're told God is love. If that's the case, then love is a deep mystery, and we should never try to box it or to define it. We should just accept it and love one another. And that's what it's about.
Well, Joseph, I appreciate that. And we're gathering together a list of events that are happening in Vermont and in our region around this. So thank you for highlighting both of those, a vigil at 6 p.m. in Burlington and a vigil at 5 p.m. at the State House in Montpelier. Let's hear from Richard in Haverhill, Massachusetts. Hi, Richard.
Yes, thank you, Jane. I'm going to say that nightclub was more than just entertainment and dancing and having fun. It was actually a sanctuary, and for particularly most of the victims were Latino, particularly Puerto Rican of descent, and they were very political too. They would talk about politics in there, from what I understand. I just think there's going to be repercussions, and because of Donald Trump, and I know what he's going to be saying more or less. So that's basically what I wanted to say. Thank you, Jane.
Richard, thanks for your call. Appreciate that. And Amanda, you see, you know, gay nightclubs and bars as a really strong place throughout history for advocacy. You know, as Richard was talking about there, that these are places where people not only have a good time, but do foment political action, find communities to come together and to create spaces for movement forward.
Right. It's not accidental that June is Pride Month, which celebrates the first riots that happened in front of bars. And that's not accidental. Bars were where people went to find sanctuary when it wasn't safe to meet, hold hands, find one another in the streets or in other public spaces. And so to create our own spaces, which have never been safe due to police raids and harassment and other forms of violence, but now to have this sort of this overt act of hate is just really, it strikes right at the heart of the movement.
You know, Joseph mentioned two vigils tonight, the one in Burlington and one in Montpelier. Beyond tonight's events for people to come together and to just feel sort of communion with one another and to think about future action, what is the trajectory now for Outright Vermont, for people in Vermont to think about in terms of action moving forward? What comes next?
Yeah, so tonight, of course, is the vigil both in Burlington and Montpelier. We've postponed we have a group for parents of gay, lesbian, bi, and queer youth. So we've postponed that until after tonight's vigil. So if parents of queer youth want to come and grieve and build space with one another, then they're welcome to do that after tonight's vigil. I know in tandem with the Pride Center, in the wake of Amos Beattie's passing, there are going to be community dialogues and talking about structural violence and the way that impacts the queer and trans community. So I'm interested to see where those conversations take us in action as a community.
And specifically with young people, I mean, Outright Vermont is an advocacy group specifically directed at young queer people in Vermont. This must be a really scary event for so many of them.
Yeah, I think so. It's especially hard because young people are so celebratory, and this is the month and the time when we really feel free to celebrate exactly who we are. And so to have that at the start of this celebration, I think, is going to hit really hard.
Amanda Rodenberg is the Director of Advocacy for Outright Vermont. Thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you so much.
You can continue to share your thoughts with us. Go to vpr.net, click on Vermont Edition. We're looking at how our communities are responding to the shootings in Orlando. And coming up, we're going to talk a little bit about how faith communities are grappling with the events and what they are doing moving forward now. If you'd like to share your thoughts on that, our number is 1-800-639-2211. You're listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're looking at how our community is responding to the mass shootings that occurred in Orlando over the weekend and starting to engage in the conversations that are unfolding across the country about gun control, homophobia, fringe religious affiliations, and terrorism. If you're thinking about things and you'd like to share your feelings, come together in our community. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. We'd like to hear your voice. Or you can post a note on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Bill is calling in from Morrisville. Hi, Bill. What are you thinking?
Oh, I appreciate the whole conversation of coming together in community, and I appreciate particularly Joseph's comments about loving one another. I am also a Christian, but just not to focus on that, but I'll say something that may not be welcomed by some of your listeners and your guests, but this incident was not about homosexual rights, LGBT. It was not about that. That target was clearly evident by this person who was informed by radical Islam. And I want to remind people that as we reach out in community and aspire to love each other and look for people who may be on the fringes, and as we seek to see who the victims were in this, that we not forget that there are victims all over this country right now who are being subjected to the indoctrination of radical Islam, and this gentleman was one of them. Whatever you may think of this person, he's in God's hands. God will figure out clearly what he did wrong, but he is also a victim of a radical ideology that is a totally twisted hate cult version of a religion that is worldwide. And I just don't want us to forget, as much as we need to focus on the victims being on that community of LGBT, we need to remember that there are many victims being born in this country right now.
Well, Bill, you bring up religion, and I want to address that. We're going to talk about religion and faith communities, not just what faith communities can do now moving forward and how they're seeing a role in this, but also the role of faith and radicalism in this country. And to that end, let's turn now to Bo Skurich. He's a Muslim chaplain at Middlebury College. And Bo, I appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you for having me today.
Would you like to respond to what Bill was saying there about, you know, Bill said he wants to recognize that even the perpetrators of violence are victims of a radical ideology. Could I get you to address that first?
I would be happy to address it. I think, first off, I would prefer to just express the devastation and the pain around this incident that just occurred in Orlando. I think that I want to put my heart there first, that this is... this is tragic. This is devastating. It's unthinkable. And it's something we're all grappling with. It's hard to wrap our hearts around and for our hearts to confront. As far as what the gentleman said, yes, I mean, there is a fringe minority in the Islamic community that is causing a great deal of destruction. I think that's clearly undeniable. And you know, at the end of the day, with one of what the previous callers mentioned, is what do we do about it? My feeling is love has to be stronger than hate. As long as the balance of hate weighs heavier than love, then I think we're going to continue to see these types of things happen. And so we have to try to find a way to come together with people of goodwill and tip the balance that love becomes greater and heavier than the hate that we see.
You said right off the bat, Bo Skurich, that one of the things that you wanted to address is that you wanted to put your heart out there, that this is a tragedy. It sounds like you're feeling very strongly about this, that you have an intense sadness about it.
Absolutely. It's extremely heavy. It's to see such a vulnerable community, the LGBTQ community, targeted in this way, a community that needs to be more protected as it is, to see this type of thing happen is just it's almost unbearable.
So then what do you do, you personally? I mean, what are you thinking about actions you can take?
Well, there'll be a third vigil here in Middlebury tomorrow evening. We don't have a time yet, but we are we're working out the details now. There'll be a vigil here in Middlebury, Vermont. And we're going to express our solidarity. We're going to be shoulder to shoulder with them. The LGBTQ community has always been extremely supportive of the Muslim community as a fellow minority. And we need to step up now and do absolutely whatever we can to take an active role in supporting and helping them.
There's also been fear that's been expressed within the wider Muslim community in this country that Muslims could become targets because of the actions of this alleged shooter who identified himself with Islamic State. Is that something that you either are concerned about or maybe are already hearing about?
I'm sure that will come up in the coming days. As of now, my heart is just with the devastation that's occurred and the pain within the LGBTQ community specifically and within our country. I think there'll be a time when I'm sure the Islamophobia will become, those tensions will be inflamed. I'm sure, you know, Donald Trump will be taking advantage of the situation. But I think in the present moment, that's not really where I want to put my attention. I think I want to have it solely with the LGBTQ community and those who are suffering from what's just occurred.
We got a note from Patricia who says, our daughter is married to a female. I live in terror of them being targeted from someone's unbridled hate. So, Bo Skurich, since that's where your heart is and that's where your focus is right now, how do you try to approach homophobia and violence against people because of their gender identity or their sexuality in this case?
Well, the way my faith informs me of Islam, it's to love every human being universally, absolutely, without making any sort of distinction, to love them as I love myself. I became Muslim about 12 years ago, and if I had thought that Islam, the way it was taught to me, was anything other than that, then I would have had nothing to do with it. So that's, for me, I want to deepen in my own tradition, my faith of bringing through a stronger and stronger love for all people without separation.
Bo Skurich is a Muslim chaplain at Middlebury College. Bo, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you for having me.
We're getting notes, thoughts from people today as we talk about what happened in Orlando and how people in Vermont and our region are reacting and addressing issues that they see coming out of this situation. Sue says, I feel the only position more strongly held than negativity toward the LGBT community is the belief that every citizen should be allowed to own assault weapons. I despair that people will come to love and accept gays, lesbians, bi, and transgender people any more than that they will enact legislative solutions to gun violence. Sue says, we live in a crappy, hate-filled society, and I am ashamed. You know, we are also going to look at issues around guns, gun control, gun restrictions, the history of guns in this country, and what might happen coming out of this. Not for today's show. We're still working on getting guests together for that, but that is something that we're going to be talking about in the coming days on this program. If you have thoughts on that, we would love to hear more. You can write to Vermont Edition at vpr.net. Let's go to Wes calling in from Marshfield. Hi, Wes. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. First and foremost, of course, my condolences and sincere regrets to the victims' families. Now, next item, the three desert religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, all have a dichotomy between the image of the loving father figure and dispensing love and the image of the wrathful, angry God. And we all have a choice. Which way to go?
Yeah, Wes, I hear you. Which way to go? And that idea of what religion teaches us and where to take what you get from those readings and from those teachings. I want to move us along to talk with another member of the faith community here. The Reverend Earl Cooper Camp is a pastor of the Episcopal Church of the Good Shepherd in Barrie and president of the Board of Directors of Vermont Interfaith Action. And he's on the phone with us now. Hello and welcome to the program.
Hello, Jane, and thank you so much for opening up the airways on this, in the midst of this tragedy, so that we can talk about this and console together and especially grieve the victims.
Yeah, and especially grieve the victims, as you said. But, you know, Wes was just talking about what we take from religion and how we use it. And I'm interested in hearing from you as a member of the faith community. How does faith come into this for you? How do you then direct it in a positive way?
Well, it's difficult because, as I heard a young woman from Florida Equality on the radio this morning, said, you know, just reeling. And I think we're all sort of reeling. This is not new. We've had incidents like this throughout the country, church shootings, even here in central Vermont last year, a mass shooting. And, you know, just it sets you reeling each time. But faith tells us that not only are there's a number, 50 people killed yesterday morning, but those were sons, brothers, fathers, husbands, daughters, sisters, mothers, that each one was a precious child of God in precious relationships with each other. You know, they will be mourned by their partners, by their families, by their friends. But each of us is put in that same sense of mourning as well, and also for those who are still clinging to their lives in hospital. And that deep sense of faith really helps us to remember who they are and who we are. And that necessitates, I think, one of your callers earlier was despairing, and despair is easy to fall into, but at the same time, I think Chaplain Skurich really said that he quoted Bishop Desmond Tutu, good is stronger than evil, love is stronger than hate, light is stronger than darkness, and life is stronger than death. And that's the hope that we go at. That's the hope that's been given to us by our religious convictions, our religious principles, and the hope that we then move forward with as well.
So in terms of actions and reaching out, what do you and what does the Interfaith Action Group do next to ally yourselves with different communities in Vermont?
Well, and we're going to keep doing what we've done for over a decade here in Vermont, which is Vermont Interfaith Action. Interfaith is our middle name, and putting that interfaith into action is what we do. Building up trusting relationships between our congregations, between our different faith traditions, for the betterment of lives of all Vermonters. That's why we work together with the Jewish community, with the Islamic community here in Vermont, support each other. And this is work that's gone on for years, so that it's not just something that happens where we come together after tragedy, not really knowing who each other, who's in the room with us. But in doing this work together, Vermont Interfaith Action is able to then really, we were recently talking with some of the members at the Islamic Center. They feel very supported by the other denominations and faith traditions here in Vermont. I know we've got very good relations between our Christian churches and the Jewish community as well. And especially, here it's so difficult in a state that's made historic gains, for the rights and freedom and really for the loving acceptance of our gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered, and queer brothers and sisters, to see them so viciously attacked like this. So it's about building those relationships year after year so that in the light of a tragedy like this, we can come together and keep moving forward and knowing that, yes, there are some people who take religious extremism, but as we build that hope, we see who those people are and draw them in away from ways of hatred, but into those loving, trusting relationships working for the betterment of all Vermonters.
That's the Reverend Earl Cooper Camp, pastor of the Episcopal Church of the Good Shepherd in Barrie and president of the Board of Directors of Vermont Interfaith Action. Thank you very much for being on the program today.
Thanks for this invitation to speak, Jane.
We are talking today about how people in our communities are reacting to what they've been seeing and reading about the shootings in Orlando, the deadliest mass shooting in American history. Coming up, how to cope with feelings of sadness, vulnerability, hopelessness. We heard from Sue, who said she's despairing. So what do you do if you're feeling despair? Also, how to talk to your kids about violence and tragedy. You can call 1-800-639-2211 if you'd like to share your thoughts or questions. This is Vermont Edition. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today, we are talking with people around the state about how they're reacting to the mass shooting in Orlando over the weekend. If you want to add your thoughts, questions, feelings, or tell us about what you're doing in response, call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Many people have gone online to express grief and fear and a sense of hopelessness in the face of violence and hate. Our next guest says all those feelings are completely normal. Beth Holden is a mental health counselor and associate director at Howard Center, the designated mental health agency based in Chittenden County. Her expertise is with kids and families and trauma. Beth, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Jane.
So it is common to feel strong emotions after something like this, even if it doesn't affect you personally?
Very common, and I'm afraid given recent news and even historically, we as a nation have faced many, many tragedies, and I think each new tragedy that happens, it's sort of a cumulative effect. So something new happens, and folks are sort of faced with all those old feelings and then the new feelings that come along with this sadness in Orlando.
When you say old feelings, you mean so people are remembering previous tragedies, whether or not it's happened, something has happened to them?
Yes, I think that's very, very common in our field, in the mental health field. We often use the word triggers when we talk about that. So people could be triggered by some personal experiences they have had regarding loss or trauma, and or just experiencing the other things like 9/11 or the Boston Marathon. I think it's very common for those feelings to be resurface at times like this.
So what are some of the common things that people might be aware of feeling or that you highlight that often come out of this for people who are feeling some sense of trauma?
I always warn people that there are times they get feelings that they might feel like something's wrong with them or that they might feel like they're going crazy, which can be a very derogatory comment. And I want to reassure people that that is not the case, that things happen like your sleep may suddenly be affected. Maybe you can't sleep or you fall asleep but can't stay asleep. Kids might go as far as having nightmares. That's true for adults as well. Your appetite could be off. It might be difficult to concentrate. The thoughts of the images that sometimes come up on the news might be in someone's mind and sort of playing like a tape within their brain. All those things are very common and normal when you've experienced something like this, even if it didn't hit you personally.
So how do you manage those feelings then?
I think what's helpful is for people to know themselves best. And if you're an adult, know yourself, know your tolerance level. For example, if you are sensitive and you are having feelings of feeling overwhelmed and hopeless, you might not want to watch the news for hours at a time. That would be an example. For kids, if you're a caregiver taking care of kids, you might want to restrict how much they're hearing from news, for example, or other sources of media. That's one example. Another thing is to try to stay on your routines as best as possible, whether an adult or a youth. Keep your work schedule going, keep your school schedule going or childcare, keep your hobbies going, stay connected to your friends and family, those people that you're connected to anyway. Try to keep normalcy going.
So, you know, when one of the things, though, that people do say they are feeling is fear or vulnerability in addition to, you know, feelings of sadness and a fear that this could happen to you next, you know, this idea of what if I'm in the wrong place at the wrong time next. How do you address that feeling of vulnerability that often comes from events like these, regardless of what sort of part of a community you put yourself in?
I think we're hearing that, and from a mental health perspective, we're hearing it more and more and more, this sense of personal safety being compromised. I think what is helpful for all of us is to remember perspective, and perspective is sometimes hard to take at moments like this, and I in no way want to minimize the tragedy of the loved ones and family members, and we also need to remember that generally speaking, the world is a safe place, and when we're raising children developmentally, they need to believe that the world is a safe place. When we start to get to that paralyzed fear and not moving forward in our lives and not getting things done that we normally would do, that's a signal to us that this might be taking on a different level of stress that we might want to get some help with. So perspective is one thing, and just a reminder of there are certain things in life that we can't control, but living in that fear all the time is not going to help us either. So how do we achieve that balance of being mindful in our world of scary things that happen, and how do we still live our lives? Many of your speakers talked about the strength that people find sometimes in tragedies like this and communities joining together. I think that's a great example of how we move on and find a source of strength when these horrible things happen.
We're talking about how to cope with feelings of sadness, feelings of despair, hopelessness, vulnerability after something like the shootings in Orlando. And we're also hearing from many listeners today with a variety of perspectives on how you're feeling, what you're thinking you might do, where the conversation goes for you. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211 if you'd like to share your perspective. You can also post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Jaya says, kudos for creating the space to discuss this most recent national tragedy as Vermonters. It is incredibly disheartening to see the widespread use of the headline, largest loss of life from mass shooting in U.S. history. We cannot allow history to be erased. Nearly 300 were slaughtered at Wounded Knee. These are historically marginalized people. Jaya, thanks for your comment. I hear that and appreciate it. And let's go to Ellen, who's calling in from Cabot. Hi, Ellen. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a couple of points. They're basically around guns. The first one is that given the fact that we are awash in weaponry in this country and awash in hatred, this is, for me, not remotely shocking. I'm just very tired of hearing people say how shocking this is. Shocking? This is expected. We should be expecting it. Why is it not happening all day long, every day, given the hatred and the presence of weaponry? The other point I'd like to make is that we're often, anytime we hear about these things, we hear about, oh, the person was a great guy, he was really nice, he was so nice to his children. So what I've concluded is that guns turn good people into bad people. And we have to remember that most of the gun deaths in this country are by handguns. The last point I'd like to make is that in England and Europe, there's just as much hatred as there is here. But what they don't have is access to weapons of mass destruction. They have it's almost impossible to buy a gun, other than maybe a hunting gun in England. I know that. So thank you.
Ellen, I appreciate your comments, and I want to remind people what I mentioned before, that we are going to work on a broader conversation about guns in this country and guns in this state. It is an issue that comes up for so many people after this, and certainly will be a political issue. Neil has a perspective different than Ellen's. Neil wrote in to say, unfortunately, an LGBT club is an easy target because the chances of someone there exercising their Second Amendment right and having a gun to protect themselves against this horrible act is slim to none. That's Neil's perspective there. He says, though, what would be the outcome if he tried to commit this crime in a cowboy bar in Texas? He wouldn't even make it in the door. Restricting guns just takes more power away from law-abiding citizens and makes them even more dependent on a government who continually fails to keep people safe. So again, if you have a perspective on guns coming out of this event, we'd love to hear it. You can send a note to vermontedition@vpr.net, and we'll keep it in mind for future programming on that. We do still have Beth Holden on the line, counselor at the Howard Center. Her expertise is with kids and families and trauma. And Beth, you mentioned a couple of times, you know, kids involved in this, how you should be perhaps addressing if you have children in your household. But maybe we could put a finer point on that. How do you help kids process something like this? And, you know, depending on their ages, it would strike me that it's a different response that parents might have and a different response that kids might have.
Yes, that's very important. I like to remind parents or grandparents or caregivers of any type that they know their youth best. So it's hard to put number chronological ages on things because developmentally there's such a wide range for children. So you could have kids who are very mature and manage stress well. You could have teenagers who are not very mature and don't manage stress well. So I just want to remind caregivers, know your kids and function that way. So I think we're raising kids more and more these days to be global citizens. I think kids are very curious about what goes on in the world and what goes on nationally. So when you have a child that's a little more mature and is interested and can handle things with healthy coping, they could be inquisitive, they could be asking questions, and I encourage parents and caregivers to answer those questions and take the youth's cue. So if they stop asking questions or suddenly get quiet or kind of withdrawn, they kind of give you the message that they're done with that conversation. I would take their lead on that. I would also keep the information as minimal as possible, and you can build it up as the child keeps being inquisitive and asking. For little children, they might not even be aware that this is going on, and that's a perfectly healthy, normal way to respond to little kids. We don't need to inform our young children when these tragedies happen because they don't have the capacity to understand it or make sense of it. I sometimes hear from parents like, oh, well, we can't protect our kids. We can't keep these bad things from them. I would challenge parents to think about that a little bit, and depending, again, on that developmental stage, you decide what's okay for your little kid to know or not, and the little ones really probably don't need to know about this. However, they could hear it at school, they could hear it at daycare. So that's where you have to balance what your home information is and what's okay to be discussing at home, because they might hear it somewhere else.
Beth Holden is Associate Director at Howard Center. I appreciate your time and expertise today, Beth. Thank you for calling us.
Thank you.
And we do have numbers for people who are feeling overwhelmed. If you need someone to talk to, we have Howard Center numbers for adults and for children. Go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition. And thanks for joining us today. As always, feel free to email us if you have comments, questions, anything you'd like to express about our program, or just if you want to keep this conversation going, go to vpr.net and click on today's Vermont Edition. Our producers are Rick Singeri, Sam Gail Rosen, and Meg Malone. Mary Williams directed the show. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels, and our theme music was composed by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.